Hello and welcome to a very important and very open edition of the Smart Life Podcast, dedicated to Mental Health Awareness Week. Today, we dive into a topic that touches all of us, directly or indirectly: mental health in our daily and professional lives. Join us as we explore critical areas of mental well-being that resonate with many of us. Managing stress in a deadline-driven, navigating the complexities of remote and hybrid work, and mastering self-care as working parents. And we're doing it by lifting the lid on our experience with Beacon, sharing personal stories from our journey, and hopefully you may find some of it interesting and helpful. We'll discuss the challenges of maintaining balance amidst the pressure of modern working life, and the crucial strategies that we have. So, without further ado, please welcome our guest. Joining me is Jonathan Curtis from Go Forward Associates, a leadership coach that not only specialises in supporting and elevating talented companies to raise and reach their potential, but also, for his sins, supports the Beacon team to do just that. And also joining me is my longtime colleague and head of strategy, Laura Bull. Laura has worked in agencies for over 10 years, is a busy working mum like myself, and is the calmest person I know when things get super busy. Welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, guys.
Before we start, can you both tell me a little bit more about your background and why this is such an important topic to you? Jonathan, let's start with you.
This is really, really important to me. Lovely to be here. Thank you for the invite. Being well, being and doing our best is really, really important. And having had a journey of ups and downs in the past with mental health, it's one of the things that really enabled me to set up my own practice 9 years ago. And it's such a privilege now to journey with other people, helping them be well and helping bring out the best in them and their teams.
And you, Laura?
I am head of strategy here at Beacon. I've been working with marketing agencies for the last 10 years now. And whilst we're not saving lives, we are still in very fast, a stressful and deadline environment. So taking care of our mental health to make sure we don't burn out, especially as working parents as well, is really important.
I mean, taking that topic first, so managing stress in a deadline-driven environment, what are the main difficulties to your mental health from working in a deadline-driven environment? Jonathan, do you want to take this first?
There are so many challenges, and you also talked about being parents as well, and that's a whole other dimension. So we all bring stuff to the workplace, whether we are a carer, whether we are a parent, we all bring stuff. So some of us, some days, have more capacity, some of us have less capacity, but there are factors around stress, perfectionism, lack of control, burnout. If we're in a fast-paced environment, if it's that time of year, if it's month end, there can be a real poor work life. So as I coach a number of people in different sectors, the common things are typically stress, anxiety, wanting to do well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's some psychological insecurity. So those things can contribute to difficulties with our mental health.
Absolutely. I mean, Laura, we can talk a bit more about how, you know, particularly more of an agency where we've got lots of deadlines and lots of pulls on our attention. What would you say is the biggest thing affecting us?
I think it's feeling the pressure on our ability to deliver. Like, so there's so many different deadlines coming in from all different angles. You've got lots of different clients, suppliers, and it's getting able to deal with that kind of pressure, and it's like, okay, what do I need to do? How can I do it? And like Jonathan said, the anxiety, and it's, can I do this? I felt like my behavior, there's so many deadlines and so much pressure coming at me that I then doubt my own ability to deliver it, and then that impacts mental health because, you know, yeah, you are worried about yourself, but then there are times when you just want to say, well, I can't do it, it's not possible, so I'll throw my hands up and give up, and that's not helpful either, and then I'll get even more stressed and more anxious.
Yeah, it's such a, I think the biggest problem that we have to be constantly aware of if you work in an agency environment is that,
yeah,
that
because we run at such a high pace that sometimes you don't even know it's coming because you're just like, well, I'm on it. I can deliver, deliver. And then you get a quiet period and it just hits you over the bridge. And it's so important to get that balance. And I think, going back to what you said, Jonathan, about doing good work, that's something that we relate to in the sense that we know where we're going and we know what we're going to do, but we're so desperate as a team sometimes to do good work. You just don't want to let anybody down. And so it's very difficult to draw those boundary lines, I think, when you're in a high pressure and knowing when to sort of call it a day. So techniques can we use to make us not just survive it, but thrive in a high pressure environment and with all those deadlines? Because those are the things that make them, because it is enjoyable as well, otherwise I wish to do it. But what can we be doing to help make that better? Jonathan, what do you think?
I think you hit on something really important there, Jess. There's something a little bit addictive about the high pressure environment as well.
Yeah.
Though it's not good for us, it's also a little bit intoxicating. It's stimulating, right?
Mm-hmm.
With experience, we know what those waves look like. We can often predict some of the intensity. Now, so actually then opportunities to restore ourselves. But it's that balance, that's that sweet spot between having pressure and it being too much. So I think that our biggest technique is to establish a healthy rhythm. But then for that not to become another burden, I haven't done that. I haven't done this self-care. I haven't been for a walk. I haven't been for a swim, whatever. But when it isn't, if we do have a quiet moment, it's maybe finishing early. It's maybe having a little bit of a longer lunch break or taking a walk or something like that. But we all have our own menu. Just like when you go to a restaurant and you sit down and you look at a menu, we like to look at a menu. And we all, I believe, need to have our own self-care menu. And it could be a variety of things. For some, it could be listening to music. It could be photography. It could be gaming, walking, exercise. These are some of the things that we can have. But having a menu that we know about ourselves, and then we choose what we want when we need it.
I relate to that. I agree with that menu system of self-care. Because what you mentioned about the pressure of getting it done, when I have like a bit more of a hefty plan or idea of wanting to do all these different things, it then itself becomes a burden on my time. So having a menu where I've got options that are quick and short that will allow me to feel a bit more relaxed, as well as, you know, something that's a bit more involved, it is really helpful, because then it doesn't feel like the act of self-care in itself is a burden. How are you in terms of what's your sort of...
I think for me, the key thing to deal when you're in a high pressure stressful situation is walk and talk to colleagues.
Yeah.
There are really people around you that you work with who are more than happy to support you. You're not going to be busy. And if you talk to them, there might be something that they say, actually, I could do this really quickly for you. Or my work is less busy. It might be just that in that high pressure stressful environment, you can't think of ideas. Like, and it again happens to me. I'll be wanting to set a presentation and then I'm like, I think I've got this, and it's building and moving, and then I'm going to Jess usually. I'm like, I'm not sure I've got this. I can't think anymore. I've been looking at it for too long. I'm stressed, and Jess on my feet head, all good. Here's some pointers. I'm like, oh, yes, I hope this is it. So I'll just keep talking to your colleagues. There's always somebody to support there. So I think that's always really useful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having, and that is, I've paid an instance as well, I'm sort of bearing the tap out, which is occasionally you are going to hit a wall with the pressure, and knowing that you can talk to your colleagues and go, I need to pass the baton to you. And they'll go, no problem. I think it up gives you a sense of like, it's not sort of fatal. Yes, but you have a rest or like thing out to somebody to me, they have that relief. And that's something really good about the team here, is that we've kind of got each other's backs, which is really, really good.
Well, something you've both touched on there is trust.
Mm.
You, Laura, you mentioned, you know, sharing within the team. Jess, you mentioned sharing with a friend or somebody of the team. And one of the things that's great about Beacon is the trust that you have with the team. And that's a mark of a high-functioning team, right? There are days when we've got less capacity, when we come into work and our cup is already full. or maybe has got very little left. But that's when we trust our colleagues and we can say, I just need to set a boundary here today. I haven't got a lot left. Can you help me with this? Because that's very humbling, but it also empowers them and it reinforces trust and working collaboratively. So having self-compassion on ourselves is really important. And yeah. As the CEO, as the MD there at Beacon, you model that really well for the others to have self-compassion on themselves too.
Thank you. No, it's really important, because also when you do talk to the other people, really, maybe we're very blessed, but they're saying you didn't help, like being called quite such a privilege to be like, yeah, I'll help, I can do that. And the other thing, speaking from sort of like an MD's perspective, I think when tackling a team's well-being, I think it's you have to consider people's personal lives. We try not to a lot of the time, and things, there's something about business that you get taught a lot of time, or people say, let's work and then you personal life, never the two shall meet. But I don't think that's the case. Like, say you can come to work and your cup already full. And if we don't make a little bit of a that or understand people ebb and flow in their lives, and that some you're picking up that slack a little bit, but then, you know, in a few months die and they don't have fall back, while you're having a bit more of a tough time with whatever it happens, you know. So to move up, for me, I'm mood free today, so that's quite a special period of time. If I again seeing me to pass away, if like an awareness that while we try our very best as individuals and humans not to go too much of our personal life to work, maybe empathic or do to stuff and to breathe. So yeah, it's sort of very important to not only have self-compassion for yourself, but have it for your team members as well.
Putting on my mental health first aider hat, I would want to just say we can signpost our colleagues and our friends as well. I know a lot of organizations are equipping people within the organizations to be mental health first aiders, to be good listeners, and we can all develop our listening skills. But there are times when we do need something a bit more intensive in terms of contacting the local mental health crisis team, our GP, independent agencies like Able Futures, where people who are more specialist can help us if those stress things are becoming a bit too much.
Absolutely. I mean, at Beacon, we not only have you as amazing support to talk through sort of like career workplace kind of things, but we also, for that reason, have an EAMP system, because as well-meaning as we are and want to help and want to listen, we're really good at tackling work problems and the sort of simple like day-to-day things that we can help and be supportive on. But, you know, we are not trained professionals. And sometimes that's what somebody needs, a bit of support from somebody who knows what they're talking about and can get proper advice. So, yeah, we're always really keen to sort of give colleagues the tools that they need if they have any extra sources of support. Usually. So one quick easy one that I've used that overwhelmed, and there's quite a lot going on, is making a list. And that can relieve you is I find the dark half sort of simple thing that making a list would ease the pressure. But I'll make the list, and it's so bad, I'm looking for my quick and easy win. What can I do that's a quick win? I can just get out the door, get done, and make my list. And that makes you feel so much better. I'm also guilty of adding things to my list that weren't on there just by conflicting off.
By doing that. I absolutely think everybody should do that. Because that's, having a look at your actual success is just such a really good boost in my aim. And lots of good at that sometimes, people. And then, absolutely better.
Picking it off is the best thing. So the other unique factor of this sort of environment and sort of with Beacon, but a lot of business nowadays is that we are either remote or hybrid work, and a lot of us, not everybody's back in the office full time. Now, we love hybrid working, and in fact, Beacon was set up in 2018, so before the pandemic, to be a hybrid business to enable us to give people flexibility, particularly if they had a family, but still sort of progress and get into leadership roles and do excellent marketing. However, it does cause difference when it comes to the general well-being of the team. So what I'm keen to talk about with both of you guys is, what have you noticed has been the common things that are challenges that affect hybrid teams? So Jonathan, from your experience.
Well, thank you. This is something that I journeying a lot with clients at the moment. It's interesting for me. For 25 years, I was locked into an institution of secondary education. There is no hybrid working or remote working with education. There was in the old days, there were snow days, which were fantastic. And I'm sure we can all remember that feeling in the morning of being told it's a snow day. And then we had the pandemic. You know, so suddenly teachers were hybrid working. But I'd like to frame what I'm about to say all around organizational health. For an organization, for a community to be healthy, I believe we need to be together. However, there are some advantages and disadvantages. The advantages of hybrid working is it can reduce the commuting stress. That's got a knock-on as well for the environment, reducing pollution, right?
Yeah.
It can also improve our work-life balance. We can put some washing out. We can collect parcels. We can see our dog during the day when we're at home, and we can do some other things like that. And for some people, they actually are more productive working from home because there isn't the office banter or the office noise or the disruption or distraction with that. So it's got some advantages. And it can be cheaper in terms of commuting. But what we lose, I think, is this front and center focus of the values and the community. And within that, I'm hearing and seeing in different companies a reduction in appreciation. And we know from science that blood flows through the brain and the pathways more effectively when we're in a positive and happier place. And we can lose those opportunities to celebrate. And we can do it in virtual calls and we can say thank yous, which is still important. But there is something missing about the buzz and being together in the community. So other disadvantages can be blurred boundaries. Well, I might work a bit later. I might just get that thing done. My bedroom is also my office. And there's that whole psychological thing there. Communication challenges. 80% of our communication is nonverbal. And when we see each other in person, we can see body language and things like that. And not being in the office, not being able to break the culture and keep things front and center that are important.
Absolutely. It is a harder. It's definitely worth doing, and we love our hybrid working. I think it really benefits our team. But like you said, with the challenges you've got a really, it's a lot of work extra that you need to change your mindset and how you cultivate that culture and how you work the team. Laura, from if we know you're specifically speaking in terms of our side of it, what are the things that you've noticed are the sort of things you have to look out for on the hybrid working?
Yes, lack of conversation between the team, lack of communication. Work can take longer. Whilst we might be more productive at home, as Ronald just said, we have got the distractions of chat and gossip. There's gossip, which we all love, that can be very distracting. But it's the view what is saying, if you might just have a really quick question, you'd ask something, or some amendments stuff might come in on a project. But what I miss is being able to go over to our creative team and say, these are just coming, what do you think? And have a face-to-face conversation to get it sorted much quicker. Around the hands of home someone or phone it over Slack or email. And it just makes the process so much longer, less efficient.
Yeah, it has those extra. The other consideration I would say to any manager working in a hybrid team in terms of culture is the one thing I've learned over the last 5 years at Beacon is anything done remotely has a lot more weight to it. Where in the office it could be a simple comment that you want to talk to somebody about, you have to think about the impact and the weight on somebody. So when you give feedback, it's very important to helping that well-being and seeing how they take it, as much as obviously like what you're saying. Sometimes saving it for an in-person day is probably a good idea, because it will, like you say, Jonathan, when you're remote and you can't read the body language, and a call, getting a call scheduled in just feels like a little bit more serious. I don't know why it does, but it does. Then if you sort of say it in passing while you're making a party. So it's that navigation that you have to kind of think about.
What I think for me is collaboration as well. It's that brainstorming. This just doesn't work as well. At the life in general, not just this weekend, but it just doesn't apply as well when you're trying to do it on a Zoom or Teams, or a kind of call. When you do it in the office, it's so much more productive. You get so many good ideas. There's side conversations that are going on between different members of the team. What about this? And we could think about this, which just doesn't happen. Hybrid call. And I feel like that collaboration is so much better in person.
Absolutely. And that sort of leads us into sort of, it's important because the type of team that we're running here at Leakin, we're a creative, collaborative, you know, we want to work as a team. We've all got the characteristics, right? And Jonathan can attest this through doing strength finders with all of us. We are a community team. We want to be together as well. So it's managing those elements to make it work. So when managing a hybrid team, what should we all be looking out for? And how can we best support a team that we're not spending every single working day with and sat next to each other? Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to be quite naughty and just want to quickly piggyback something on the last thing and something you said.
Absolutely.
Speaking to a lot of teams, I think it's harder for somebody who has line management to manage people remotely. And so I see huge benefits in organizations that understand each other's preferred method of appreciation. So some of us like to be given quality time. Some like to be given gifts. Some like to have cups of tea made. Some people like to have public feedback. And when you're remote, a lot of those are negated. It's really hard. And what should we be looking out for? There's a number of things that come to mind, but I think very clear comms where you put time and effort into those, dedicated time, where people know that there's time for them, that's their slot, whether it has a line management focus or a well-being focus or a community focus, but you put in joint lunch times and expectations like that where you get together. There's also the understanding, so we've got communicate, we've got flexibility as well, and also clear expectations. We all like to know when we've done well. We all like to know what we have been asked to do. And it can become a bit more muddled, from my experience, in hybrid working when you're not having those sort of conversations as regularly. So yeah. Those are some nuggets that you can use to better support the team. But there'll be some more in a minute that we'll bring out as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a thing where I think, and this is what I naively did in the beginning at Beacon, you just assume that you just shift straight. Oh, yeah, we work from home 3 days a week and we're in the office together. So it's exactly the same as it was before. And actually, it took me to then realise that, no, this is not the same. And you have to put very active things in place and really try and help with that conversation with the team and really try and support it. And so you don't get it right in the beginning. And it's a real working process to help keep the well-being of the team going in tricky circumstances. And, you know, also a lot of us have been hybrid working through a really difficult period of time. You know, the last 5 years, there's been a major pandemic, there's been war, there's been economic issues, the actual realization outcome of Brexit. All of that has a real big impact. And so trying to manage a team, it's that you can get that. Well, you can never get 100% right, but trying to strive to make it easier and better, and that you're taking everybody with you and they're all feeling connected into what's going on and they understand what their expectations are, really quite tough. How about you, what's from your perspective managing a team, like successful companies you do here?
I think it's looking out for the levels of engagement with business, the work that we're doing. I think there are times where people do feel a bit isolated, essentially.
Lonely.
Yeah, and so they're not going to be engaged with the business or the work that they're doing. So it's looking out for those kind of signs and seeing what additional support you can offer them to kind of make them feel like the work they're doing is worthwhile and not just shut up on the team. But I think that's one thing that I look out for. For me, the most pastoral side, yeah.
obviously you've been communicating quite heavily about emotional unit as well, about well-being, and that we have tools and services. One of the things that worries me a lot of the time, or, you know, with hybrid working a little bit, is you don't necessarily pick up on whether a colleague is struggling as quickly as if you were sitting next to them every day, because you see them once or twice a week. And then when you're in, you're all having conversations and it's all really buzzing. And it's that how do we pick up those signs that somebody's maybe not in the best of, in their best self remotely? And I think that's quite challenging. Jonathan, would you sort of, is there tips from your side and tools to managers around how they can keep an eye on that well-being of their team and what they can do about it?
Yes, absolutely. I think there's little things and big things. So, and some of the little things become big things. I'll explain. Remembering somebody's birthday and putting a card in the post, because you might have had cake or something in the office. If there's a significant life event, a child's birthday or something happening with an anniversary or something like that, little ways of connecting with your team. We talked about actions. Having some clear boundaries on communications. What I mean is having a rule about CCing. Emails, every leader rings to their coaching challenges of the email inbox. And when you're hybrid working, there's an easier temptation to CC as well. So I often recommend that you only CC if you would be prepared to have had that conversation in person or with them as well. So it kind of helps pre-filter that. So you reduce the number of noise. And as a leader, as a manager, leaving some space in your diary for drop-in. There's no agenda. It's an open slot that people can dial into.
That's really good suggestions. I think it's really important to remember the little things. One of the things that I keep I'm very passionate about with the team is that even if you're remote, having that 10-minute coffee chat that you would do when you make your own way to coffee, talk about, and I don't watch it, but the team knows, like Love Island, or I'm really looking forward to Bristol. Anything like that, just for 10 minutes. It's really difficult because it's really, really important that everybody does that on a daily basis, but it can feel really. It can feel, and I feel like this sometimes, that you don't want to disturb a colleague and they're busy working to have a 10-minute chat about your kids or something like that. But it really, really is important. And overall, it builds up over time how beneficial it is to you. And I don't know if you're the same or this. The one difference from hybrid working from working in an office, I would say, that I have to be very mindful of. And I don't know why. You self-doubt more than you would if you were in an office. 100% more, you would go, I don't know, because you don't necessarily have a colleague to just do that, springboarding as much. And you try and do it, you call people up and I'm very active in, I call any member of the team up. Okay, hey, is this post right? Or is this thinking right? And try and, have that kind of... in the day, so it's definitely something to be aware of. I think you are working remotely is you might start to doubt yourself, but it's not because it's not to do with the job. It's because you're sitting, you're working in an office on your own a lot of the time, rather than we talking. The one thing I wanted to sort of then move this conversation on to, because it's quite selfishly something that impacted me rather recently. In January, I came back to the office after maternity and running and having a child at home. I used to think I used to do multiple things at once. I had a very, very heavy hobby. See, I used to do a lot of theatre, and I have to juggle so many things. A child on your mental sort of capacity is so huge. It's such a big sort of that takes up so much of the thought process, as it should do, which makes coming back to work really tricky because it's also a big part of my brain. So I appreciate the challenges more than ever. I've always been very appreciative of how hardworking working parents have been to manage, but even more so now that I'm
also a working parent. But what are the challenges?
What a massive thing over the 17 years of being a parent. And this varies as well with those that are carers and those of us who have children with additional needs as well. And my goodness, me. Okay, so for me, my journey, there's the feeling of guilt. There's that feeling of, am I giving enough time to either? Am I doing a good job at either? So, you know, childcare arrangements, things are so finely tuned sometimes that, you know, drop off this, go there, this person, after school club there, that appointment or whatever. Things are so precarious sometimes. It can feel really quite edgy, and therefore time management's important. I know that as a parent, I've really appreciated when my workplace has been flexible. There's been a poorly child or a child's fallen off the bike sheds and knocked their front teeth out. You need to go. You need to go straight away to A&E thing, you know. Or another one's got hit with the golf club in PE. So these are some of the things that have happened. And then, you know, the whole balance at the moment in the last few years of increased financial living, of often more parents are working more, friends or grandparents are helping out with childcare. So there's that whole multifaceted strain of guilt, time, finance, stress, and then comes around World Book Day, and you've got to put out an outfit because there's an expectation of what other people are going to wear, and or the Easter bonnet. Your children are young, so you've got that to come, the Easter bonnet.
Had it at nursery. Actually, it's one of my favourite hilarious days. I had a really busy day at work. Had to give a presentation, didn't finish at all. But like, we saw the message that there was an Easter bonnet the next day. And so it was like 10 at night sewing this hat up. Guilt is one I can massively resonate with. You feel so guilty when your children are making the right choices for them and making sure that you're being present when you're with them. And being our business, that you feel guilty at work.
Yeah.
Because you're like, am I doing enough for the other baby, which is the we're kind of the friend you're working, and your brain is like, Have you eaten? You're sat at work trying to do a presentation, but all these other thoughts are going through your brain at the same time. I've let you focus on this. That actually, I want to say, fluid like,
what's going on?
And have you found this, or but I've really found this as well, that before having children, your tolerance of risk and the decisions that you have to make is a lot higher. And then you have a child and you think, even at work, and it's not just about their risk and what you do around them, but even at work, when you're making decisions, you still don't have quite the same capacity to sort of go, you know, like, we fired. Whereas now, we're like, no one got it, that's why it's really, really important.
Just sitting there.
It's an absolute minefield. I think this Saturday, I have such an appreciation. I am so much more of lots of, you know, I followed and have met through some of their tweet and see research at all, but working mums and city and dads as well. And the city ones that parents that are running their own or doing really high pressure businesses and managed to balance it, it's just incredible.
I think one of the other challenges facing my two parents is working all week. On this Friday, whatever it is, you work, and then you finish work, and then you're a parent again, and then you're a parent all weekend, and you never know. I think something that I've really felt recently, as being quite open honest, it's that challenge of I'm working or I'm mummy, and it's that very hard to balance and find who you are in the middle of all that. I think that is quite a challenge, working parents.
Incredible challenge. One of good self-care strategies, maintain our mental health. Because, and with that balance of work and family commitments, because it's even more important that we make that effort, because it's not just work, right? Like, you know, it's often lazy hell. I mean, what's the good things that working parents should do to maintain their well-being?
This has changed a lot for me over the years. I now have children that are teenagers, and connecting with teenagers is a whole different game compared to little ones that want to connect with you all the time. And Laura, I hear a lot of professional mums share the same thing. I just don't get any space. I don't get any of my own headspace. I've got demands on me at work, I've got demands from the child. I've then maybe got a partner who has some demands on me as well, and maybe wider family, particularly if it's a different culture. We know some Mediterranean, some other cultures are quite heavily focused, and particularly often on the girls as well. But some good self-care strategies. I learned the hard way to set some realistic expectations for myself. I also found having one or two good friends, people that would listen and challenge and support me, as really, really helpful. For me, my ace card is sleep. Now, considering at one stage we had 3 children under 5 that didn't sleep very well, and one of them was a 4:30 waker forever. Now he's a teenager, you can't get him up, of course. Sleep for me was really important. That was my ace card. So prioritizing my self-care, maintaining my own mental health, so a little bit of my own space where I could, if I could. Having a champion, having a buddy, having a friend, because that often can involve going out as well with them, and just being realistic. I got it wrong so many times. And as parents, we will get it wrong. But it's okay to say sorry to our children. Sorry daddy wasn't around. Sorry mommy wasn't around. And you find pockets. And I think that's one of the things that as they become teenagers, I've really struggled with, which is, you know, I would play with blocks and cars and trains and the sandpit out, you know, for hours with them. And now it's trying to work out ways to connect with them in different ways that they want. It's all driven by them now.
And I think that's so important. It's okay to apologize. You're not going to get it right. I think assuming you're going to get it right all of the time, it's not just with your children, but at work, you're going to make mistakes because you're still figuring out like how you're now going to function in this new.
As parents, what do we bring to it? We bring how we were parented. Mm-hmm. And that is from a different generation. And I'm not saying that that's not that bad, but some of that doesn't fit well now. And we've got to work out our own rhythm of parenting. And in our journey with adoption for 2 of our children, that wasn't a good fit. The way I was parented wasn't a good fit. It wasn't therapeutic enough for their needs. So it's being open to change.
And adapting how you do things is so, because you can read so many parenting books about how things, but effectively he's going to dictate how he's going to be parented, just depending on what he needs. And that's, I guess in its way, it's a sort of tool, but I think approaching it from my perspective of like being a working parent is trying to do everything with curiosity is really helpful for your own mental health. If you, it's a big beacon or my ethos about the conquer, thinking of often, from big things to themselves to connect to the students, it at least takes the pressure off. Like, yes, there's no space, there's sometimes all frantic and things, but thinking it, well, you know, I'm not going to get mindset every day and I'm going to learn from what I didn't get by and the next day, at least makes it easier to shoulder. I think having that kind of attitude, and I think that's one of my sorts of, well, that you built all sort of things, you know, something I have not been very good at and I'm working on at the moment. I'm one of those people that I do quite often work through lunch. I'll just grab and I'll be here and I'm probably on a laptop, and like I recently were in struggling to find high press, I'm like, I'm trying to make this lunch. I made a cheap lunch, right? And go out and do something myself, go for a walk, doing a bit of exercise. So trying to do a little bit of exercise just to help my own mental well-being. But something that I also think is really important is time with your partner, one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something you don't normally get as going from parents because this job and said there's a constant juggling and that job, I'll pick up after I've got this and you've got that. And it's fine for having one-on-one time. It can be a little challenge, you know, for staff, for you, Jess, and many other working families. We don't have support around us, and Jess and family, or the people, I mean, the living nearby, who can drop in and maybe sit.
But what I know the best for is when Admin G comes to visit, is taking that moment and say, actually, can you put into bed tonight? Could you mind if we just go out to dinner together? Or they'll come up from the weekend, like, actually, can we find a day out or a few hours together? And I've got much better at maximizing that time whilst we don't get it very often. When we do, I'm like, nice to see you. Now, can you just look after my child? I'm actually going to talk to my husband for a little bit.
Yes.
We might spend the whole time talking about his boy. And we try to minimize it a little bit. Oh, I spent too long talking about them, but just that one-to-one interaction conversation about things you might not talk about otherwise. I think that's so important.
It really is. I think you need like that support network around you functioning. And that guilt of taking that time for yourself. And I know it, because you're just like, oh, I should be doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But even if it's just 5 minutes, it's unfair that, you know, if you can just consistently fit that 5 minutes of just quiet into your day to just disconnect, it's so different, and it sets you off.
If I share a word but then explain it.
Yeah.
One thing I've learned over the years of being a parent is to fight for things. Now, I don't mean being aggressive or being violent, but just as Laura said, by the time work's had a piece of you, your children have had a piece of you, your partner, it could be 10, 30, and actually there's not a lot left. So my journey has been, we need to fight for quality time. So we need to put those dates in the diary, get families or friends to help with taking the children so you can have some quality time. It doesn't have to be the evening, but then also quality time with the children. Now, Friday night's going to be movie night. We are going to go Saturday, even though you're a teenager and you don't want to get up and do this. We are going to go and have some family time, because you have to push on through and sort of fight for it a little bit.
Yeah. I really agree with that. I think there's something I've seen recently is Kristen mentioned she, Jess, has been president of doing her house and decorating. And she's finding, I found, serious weekends. My husband will be doing the big DIY jobs that he's doing. I would look after our child. And I then realised that the amount of time we'd spent together as a family had been so minimal. And then over the last few weekends, we've made actors and paused on some of the DIY just to spend time doing actually three of us that don't involve us just feeding the car and driving to the next club. So making that time to spend as a family doing fun, enjoyable things together has been really cool.
Yeah, it's such a... It really reminds me of something, but so one of the best sort of, and I didn't realise it at the time, but early on in my career, I had an excellent manager, and one of the best sort of advice that she gave me in general, but she used it to apply to the fact she was a working mum, is we have so many balls up in the air, some of them are glass and some of them are plastic. And it's understanding in your work and in your family life what you can let bounce and just let it out, because you need to make sure you glass balls. And what she meant for her was that going to her child's nativity or going to an important event or sports day was a glass ball, and if it happened during the day where she was going. But likewise at work, an important client pitch meeting where we needed her, that was also a glass ball. And so, you know, she wouldn't necessarily be doing pick up, and that was going to be our husband. But she should feel guilty about it. But now that I'm become a working parent, I think that advice has got even better in terms of outside. But there are things you can't set it out so far.
One of the most efficient teams are in A&E or on the battlefield, when you see doctors and health professionals triaging and making those rapid decisions on, is this critical? Is this? And you're talking about triaging the tasks.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, who should do better for all our clients? We go back to the lead report we're trying to do, you know, and you know, not only do really great work, but really enjoy doing our great work. That's what we enjoy doing. We love doing the work that we do. It makes it better. It makes what you do better. If you've got tired and you've reached that wall, whatever you produce after that's not going to be great. But if you take the break, come back to it, and then do it, it's always going to be better. Giving yourself that break, and actually you're probably going to do it quicker. It's such an important thing to just say, triage what's important, what needs to be done, and when best to do it.
Mental Health First Aid England have a wealth of resources for individuals and for organizations, for wellness and well-being. Charities such as mine and Able Futures have some great resources for enabling managers and leaders to have conversations to support people better. So there is some great resource out there.
Absolutely. And I personally would say anybody in any team, you don't have to be a manager, you can just be a team member. If you want to become better at supporting your colleagues, but also recognizing things and getting support yourself, it's so important to invest some time in those resources and understanding where you can help yourself. I just want to say thank you so much to both of you for joining me on this important podcast. It's been really great to hear your personal story, but also to get your advice on how we can all do a little bit more to help support our own mental health and well-being. So thank you very much. Thank you for coming. It's been great.
Thank you.